You are now listening to Jess is Lit on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Jess is Lit. We are back with another literature show. I have mentioned to you guys on my last episode that I have brought back, or I have started, my reading special. And I will be reading a short story or a book that will span for about several episodes, maybe a little more, depending on how long the story is. But we started the reading section with The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. We've read a couple pages so far, and we have just left off. We left off last episode where, what was his name? Gregor. He has turned into a vermin, a weird-looking bug. He has missed his work already by a couple hours. The person who is in charge of the work has come to his house with his parents and his sister there, and they are knocking on the door trying to wonder what is happening. He isn't opening the door. He's kind of still adjusting to his state, physical state. He is very emotionally unstable as well. And yeah, that's basically where we left off. And so we will continue on the readings like we did last episode and see how far we go today. But in between the readings, of course, I have chosen several songs to play just to kind of ease in the mood for a little bit and not to get a little bored with the readings, of course, since it's just, you know, me reading a story on and on. We'll start off with one song before we start the reading today with a bit of ads, PSAs, and some show promos. And so we'll do that first, and then we'll continue on with the readings. So for now, some ads, PSAs, and show promos will play, and then a song from Fontaine. I based my songs off Fontaine last episode, but we do have two more songs from Fontaine, and then two other songs I have chosen from Crystal Shawanda. So that will be an exciting tune of a song. During the process of the reading, but for now, some ads, PSA show promos, and then a song called Nature Song for the Time Being by Fontaine. So we'll be right back. Here we go.
Are you interested in being advertised in Discorder Magazine? Discorder Magazine can be found in 32 locations and counting across Vancouver from UBC to New Westminster. You could be featured in cultural and community hubs across the Lower Mainland. To find out how you can be featured in Discorder Magazine, contact advertising at citr.ca, advertising at citr.ca. Rates start at $150. Ride with Discorder Magazine, and we'll take you all the way.
Picture this. You're walking into your local record store and start skimming the many records until you find an album that you recognize. You pick out the album, check the track list, and maybe only recognize a couple songs. Now you have to listen to the whole album, right? Well, why not do it together? On Discali, every show runs you through an entire album and breaks down key parts and songs that make up an album's aesthetic, art, and story. I'm your host, Oliver, and join me every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in talking about all things music. Want to discover more albums, artists, record pressings, and concerts? I got you. That's every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., so tune in to Discali to discover different discographies and add to the musical discourse.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshy on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshy, eat, energize. Hastings Crossing is Vancouver's eclectic heart, a welcoming, diverse community rooted in social innovation, compassion, and cultural wisdom. Situated downtown along Hastings between Richards and Gore, you will find some of Vancouver's OG businesses like Nemesis Coffee, Meat and Bread, Dressu, Nuba, and many more. By supporting local businesses and social enterprises in Hastings Crossing, you are also helping to shape a more resilient, inclusive, and sustainable local economy in the downtown east side. Find out more about how Hastings Crossing Business Improvement Association is working to support the people and economies of Vancouver's downtown east side at hxbia.com or follow us on Instagram at hxbia.
Walking through the fields of yellow, I stumbled upon one lonely flower. Her petals were facing the sun. She grew up so tall, nothing could make that thing fall. Till someone came along and said, I want that one in my bed. And took her home. Ooh. Dip my feet into the cool blue water by the bridge. I like the sound of it rushing around, pooling in the ditch. Someone wanted her. So they dried up the lake. Some people don't realize what they're doing till it's too late. Ooh. Watching the branches sway in the wind when life gets hard. They didn't want it to live past the prime, so they cut it down like a cherry and pine. Put some seeds in the space, there's nothing that can replace the damage done. Butterflies kissing my freckled skin. These tender moments seem to be wearing thin. Red tails flying so high up above. Can we get back to the way that it was? The way that it was. Ooh.
Welcome back to Jess is Lit. Those were some ads, PSAs, show promos, and Nature Song for the Time Being by Fontaine. Now we will get right into the readings now. So like I said before, Gregor is still in his room at the moment. His father, his mother, his sister, and the person in charge of his work. I forgot what you call him, but he has visited his home to figure out what the heck is going on, because Gregor has locked himself in his room. His physical state is a bug, and nobody knows but him. So we'll start on now. But Gregor was now much calmer. The words he uttered were no longer understandable, apparently, although they seemed clear enough to him, even clearer than before, perhaps because his ear had grown accustomed to the sound of them. Yet, at any rate, people now believed that something was wrong with him, and were ready to help him. The positive certainty with which these first measures had been taken comforted him. He felt himself drawn once more into the human cycle, and hoped for great and remarkable results from both the doctor and the locksmith, without really distinguishing precisely between them. To make his voice as clear as possible for the decisive conversation that was now imminent, he coughed a little, as quietly as he could, of course, since this noise too might not sound like a human cough for all he was able to judge. In the next room, meanwhile, there was complete silence. Perhaps his parents were sitting at the table with the chief clerk, whispering. Perhaps they were all leaning against the door and listening. Slowly, Gregor pushed the chair toward the door, then let go of it, caught hold of the door for support, the soles at the end of his little legs were somewhat sticky, and rested against it for a moment after his efforts. Then he set himself to turning the keys in the lock with his mouth. It seemed unhappily that he hadn't really any teeth. What could he grip the key with? But on the other hand, his jaws were certainly very strong. With their help, he did manage to set the key in motion, heedless of the fact that he was undoubtedly damaging them somewhere, since a brown fluid issued from his mouth, flowed over the key, and dripped on the floor. "Just listen to that," said the chief clerk next door. "He's turning the key." That was great encouragement to Gregor, but they should all have shouted encouragement to him, his father and mother too. "Go on, Gregor," they should have called out. "Keep going, hold on to that key." And in the belief that they were all following his efforts intently, he clenched his jaws recklessly on the key with all the force at his command. As the turning of the key progressed, he circled around the lock, holding on now only with his mouth, pushing on the key as required, or pulling it down again with all the weight of his body. The louder click of the finally yielding lock literally quickened Gregor. With a deep breath of relief, he said to himself, "So I didn't need the locksmith," and laid his head on the handle to open the door wide. Since he had to pull the door toward him, he was still invisible when it was really wide open. He had to edge himself slowly around the near half of the double door, and to do it very carefully if he was not to fall plump upon his back just on the threshold. He was still carrying out this difficult maneuver, with no time to observe anything else, when he heard the chief clerk utter a loud, "Oh!" It sounded like a gust of wind, and now he could see the man, standing as if he was nearest to the door, clapping one hand before his mouth open, and slowly backing away as if driven by some invisible steady pressure. His mother, in spite of the chief clerk's being there, her hair was still undone and sticking up in all directions. First clasps her hand and looked at his father, then took two steps forward. Gregor fell on the floor, and among her outspread skirts, her face quite hidden on her breast. His father nodded his fist with a fierce expression on his face, as if he meant to knock Gregor back into his room, then looked uncertainly around the living room, covered his eyes with his hands, and wept till his great chest heaved. Gregor did not go now into the living room, but leaned against the inside of the firmly shut wing of the door, so that only half his body was visible and his head above it, bending sideways to look at the others. The light had meanwhile strengthened. On the other side of the street, one could see clearly a section of the endlessly long, dark gray building opposite. It was a hospital, abruptly punctuated by its row of regular windows. The rain was still falling, but only in large, singly discernible and literally singly splashing drops. The breakfast dishes were set out on the table lavishly, for breakfast was the most important meal of the day to Gregor's father, who lingered it out for hours over various newspapers. Right opposite Gregor on the wall hung a photograph of himself in military service, as a lieutenant, hand on sword, a carefree smile on his face, inviting one to respect his uniform and military bearing. The door leading to the hall was open, and one could see that the front door stood open too, showing the landing beyond and the beginning of the stairs going down. "Well," said Gregor, knowing perfectly that he was the only one who had retained any composure, "I'll put my clothes on at once, pack up my samples, and start off. Will you only let me go?" "You see, sir, I'm not obstinate, and I'm willing to work. Traveling is a hard life, but I couldn't live without it." "Where are you going, sir? To the office?" "Yes." "Will you give me a true account of all this? One can be temporarily incapacitated, but that's just the moment for remembering former services and bearing in mind that later on, when the incapacity has been got over, one will certainly work with all the more industry and concentration. I'm loyal bound to serve the chief, you know, that very well. Besides, I have to provide for my parents and my sister. I'm in great difficulties, but I'll get out of them again. Don't make things any worse for me than they are. Stand up for me in the firm. Travelers are not popular there, I know. People think they earn sacks of money and just have a good time. A prejudice there's no particular reason for revisiting. But you, sir, have a more comprehensive view of affairs than the rest of the staff. Yes, let me tell you in confidence, a more comprehensive view than the chief himself, who, being the owner, lets his judgment easily be swayed against one of his employees. And you know very well that the traveler who is never seen in the office almost the whole year round can so easily fall a victim to gossip and ill luck and unfounded complaints, which he mostly knows nothing about, except when he comes back exhausted from his rounds, and only then suffers in person from their evil consequences, which can no longer trace back to the original causes. Sir, don't go away without a word to me, to show that you think me in the right, at least to some extent. But as Gregor's very first words, the chief clerk had already backed away and only stared at him with parted lips over one twitching shoulder. And while Gregor was speaking, he did not stand still one moment, but stole away toward the door, without taking his eyes off Gregor, yet only an inch at a time, as if obeying some secret injunction to leave the room. He was already at the hall, and the suddenness with which he took his last step out the living room would have made one believe he had burned the sole of his feet. Once in the hall, he stretched his right arm before him toward the staircase, as if some supernatural power were waiting there to deliver him. Gregor perceived that the chief clerk must on no account be allowed to go away in his frame of mind if his position in his firm were not to be endangered to the utmost. His parents did not understand this so well. They had convinced themselves in the course of the years that Gregor was settled for life in this firm. And besides, they were so preoccupied with their immediate troubles that all foresight had forsaken them. Yet Gregor had this foresight. The chief clerk must be detained, soothed, persuaded, and finally won over. The whole future of Gregor and his family depended on it. If only his sister had been there. She was intelligent. She had begun to cry while Gregor was still lying quietly on his back. And no doubt the chief clerk, so partial to ladies, would have been guided by her. She would have shut the door of the flat and in the hall talked him out of his horror. But she was not there, and Gregor would have to handle the situation himself. And without remembering that he was still unaware of what powers of movement he possessed, without even remembering that his words in all possibility, indeed in all likelihood, would again be unintelligible, he let go of the wing of the door, pushed himself through the opening, started to walk toward the chief clerk, who was already ridiculously clinging with both hands to the railing of the landing. But immediately, as he was feeling for support, he fell down with a little cry upon all his numerous legs. Hardly was he down when he experienced for the first time this morning a sense of physical comfort. His legs had firm ground under them. They were completely obedient, as he noted with joy. They even strove to carry him forward in whatever direction he chose, and he was inclined to believe that a final relief from all his sufferings was at hand. But in the same moment as he found himself on the floor, rocking with suppressed eagerness to move, not far from his mother, indeed just in front of her, she, who had seemed so completely crushed, sprang all at once to her feet, her arms and fingers outspread, cried, "Help! For God's sake, help!" Bent her head down as if to see Gregor bent better, yet on the contrary kept backing senselessly away, had quite forgotten that the Latin table stood behind her, sat upon it hastily, as if in absence of mind, when she bumped into it, and seemed altogether unaware that the big coffee pot beside her was upset and pouring coffee in a flood over the carpet. "Mother, mother," said Gregor in a low voice, and looked up at her. The chief clerk, for the moment, had quite slipped from his mind. Instead, he could not resist snapping his jaws together at the sight of the streaming coffee. That made his mother scream again. She fled from the table and fell into the arms of his father, who hastened to catch her. But Gregor had now no time to spare for his parents. The chief clerk was already on the stairs. With his chin on the banisters, he was taking one last backward look. Gregor made a spring to be as sure as possible of overtaking him. The chief clerk must have divined his intention, for he leaped down several steps and vanished. He was still yelling, "Ugh!" and it echoed through the whole staircase. Unfortunately, the flight of the chief clerk seemed completely to upset Gregor's father, who had remained relatively calm until now, for instead of running after the man himself, or at least not hindering Gregor in his pursuit, he seized in his right hand the walking stick that the chief clerk had left behind on a chair, together with a hat and greatcoat, snatched in his left hand a large newspaper from the table, and began stamping his feet and flourishing the stick and the newspaper to drive Gregor back into his room. No entreaty of Gregor's availed. Indeed, no entreaty was even understood. However, humbly he bent his head, his father only stamped on the floor the more loudly. Behind his father, his mother had torn open a window, despite the cold weather, and was leaning far out of it with her face in her hands. A strong draught set in from the street to the staircase. The window curtains blew in, the newspapers on the table fluttered, stray pages whisked over the floor. Pitilessly, Gregor's father drove him back, hissing and crying, "Shoo!" like a savage. But Gregor was quite unpracticed in walking backwards. It really was a slow business. If he only had a chance to turn around, he could get back into his room at once. But he was afraid of exacerbating his father by the slowness of such a rotation. At any moment, the stick of his father's hand might hit him a fatal blow on the back or on the head. In the end, however, nothing else was left for him to do, since his horror he observed that in moving backwards, he could not even control the direction he took. And so, keeping an anxious eye on his father all the time over his shoulder, he began to turn around as quickly as he could, which was, in reality, very slowly. Now, we'll take a quick break here and play some tunes that I've chosen. But yeah, we're basically at the point where the chief clerk, his father, his mother, and Gregor's sister, they have all found out that he is indeed a bug. And I don't know, the chief clerk, I guess it's because, you know, he's not the family, he kind of left off. But at first when I was reading this, you know, I was expecting a bit more support by the father, but looking at it now, where we're at right now, he does not seem to want to support Gregor's transformation at all, and so we'll just kind of see where this takes us in the future. But that's basically where it is. Gregor is being shooed off by his father, and his mother is just in lots of distress. So is his sister. But before we get on to more readings, we'll play another song from Fontaine called This Mess. So we'll be back after this. Here we go.
Wake up slow. Time to go. I'll roll out of bed and hit the road. Don't let the moments pass you by.
Welcome back to Jess's Lit. That was This Mess by Fontaine. Now, for those of you who are just joining now, we just finished a little section of The Metamorphosis. Gregor is exposed, and the chief clerk has ran off, and his father doesn't really seem to care that he has, you know, turned into this really weird bug. And we're just at the scene where his father is kind of shooing him off into his room. And so that's kind of sad. You would expect your father to support you, because it's, you know, it's not your fault that you just all of a sudden turn into a vermin, but doesn't seem like it's the case. I hope he kind of changes. For those of you who read it, please do not spoil, but it is a sad scene here, but we'll just keep it rolling. Perhaps his father noted his good intentions, for he did not interfere except every now and then to help him in the maneuver from the distance with the point of the stick. If only he would have stopped making that unbearable hissing noise. It made Gregor quite lose his head. He had turned almost completely around when the hissing noise was so distracted him that even turned a little the wrong way again. But when at last his head was fortunately right in front of the doorway, it appeared that his body was too broad simply to get through the opening. His father, of course, in his present mood, was far from thinking of such a thing as opening the other half of the door to let Gregor have enough space. He had merely the fixed idea of driving Gregor back into his room as quickly as possible. He would never have suffered Gregor to make the circumstantial preparations for standing up on end and perhaps slipping his way through the door. Maybe he was now making more noise than ever to urge Gregor forward, as if no obstacle impeded him. To Gregor, anyhow, the noise in his rear sounded no longer like the voice of one single father. This was really no joke, and Gregor thrust himself, come what might, into the doorway. One side of his body rose up. He was tilted at an angle in the doorway. His flank was quite bruised. Horrid blotches stained the white door. Soon he was stuck fast, and left to himself, could not have moved at all. His legs on one side fluttered, trembling in the air. Those on the other were crushed painfully to the floor when from behind his father gave him a strong push, which was literally a deliverance, and he flew far into the room, bleeding freely. The door was slammed behind him with the stick, and then at last there was silence. Now we just finished chapter one. Gregor is completely, I guess, thrown into the room, and he is left there helpless. And I guess there's, you know, just one way to find out, keep reading, but I do feel bad for Gregor at this moment. We'll see how it goes. Chapter 2. Not until it was twilight did Gregor wake out of a deep sleep, more like a swoon than a sleep. He would certainly have waked up of his own accord not much later, for he felt himself sufficiently rested and well slept. But it seemed to him as if a fleeting step and a cautious shutting of the door leading into the hall had aroused him. The electric lights in the street cast a pale sheen here and there on the ceiling and the upper surfaces of the furniture, but down below, where it lay, it was dark. Slowly, awkwardly trying out his feelers, which he now first learned to appreciate, he pushed his way to the door to see what had been happening there. His left side felt like one single long, unpleasantly tense scar, and he had actually no limp on his two rows of legs. One little leg, moreover, had been severely damaged in the course of that morning's events. It was almost a miracle that only one had been damaged and trailed uselessly behind him. He had reached the door before he discovered what had really drawn him to it, the smell of food, for there stood a basin filled with fresh milk in which floated little sops of white bread. He could almost have laughed with joy, since he was now still hungrier than in the morning, and he dipped his head almost over the eye straight into the milk. But soon, in disappointment, he withdrew against it. Not only did he find it difficult to feed because of his tender left eye, and he could only feed with the palpitating collaboration of his whole body, he did not like the milk either. Although milk had been his favorite drink, and that was certainly why his sister had set it there for him. Indeed, it was almost with repulsion that he turned away from the basin and crawled back into the middle of the room. He could see through the crack of the door that the gas was turned on in the living room, but while usually at this time his father made a habit of reading the afternoon newspaper in a loud voice to his mother and occasionally to his sister as well, not a sound was now to be heard. Well, perhaps his father had recently given up this habit of reading aloud, which his sister had mentioned so often in conversation and in her letters. But there was the same silence all around, although the flat was certainly not empty of occupants. "What a quiet life our family has been leading," said Gregor to himself, and as he sat there motionless, staring into the darkness, he felt great pride in the fact that he had been able to provide such a life for his parents and sister in such a fine flat. But what if all the quiet, the comfort, the contentment were now to end in horror? To keep himself from being lost in such thoughts, Gregor took refuge in movement and crawled up and down the room. Once during a long evening, one of the side doors was opened a little and quickly shut again. later the other side door too. Someone had apparently wanted to come in and then thought better of it. Gregor now stationed himself immediately before the living room door, determined to persuade any hesitating visitor to come in, or at least to discover who it might be. But the door was not opened again, and he waited in vain. In the early morning, when the doors were locked, they had all wanted to come in. Now that he had opened one door, and the other had apparently been open during the day, no one came in, and even the keys were on the other side of the doors. Now, we'll take a quick break here. He finds out that he's not drawn to milk, but when he was human, he has been. That's a bit weird, but I guess he is acquiring the traits of an actual bug, which is really weird. But yeah, we'll just take a quick break and then come back after another song. It is called Why Do I Love You by Crystal Shawanda. Here we go.
Away, yeah.
That was Why Do I Love You by Crystal Shawanda. We'll move on to the readings now. It was late at night before the gas went out in the living room, and Gregor could easily tell that his parents and his sister had all stayed awake until then, for he could clearly hear the three of them stealing away on tiptoe. No one was likely to visit him, not until the morning, that was certain, for he had plenty of time to meditate at his leisure on how he was how he was to arrange his life afresh. But the lofty, empty room in which he had to lie flat on the floor filled him with an apprehension he could not account for, since it had been his very own room for the past 5 years, and with a half-unconscious action, not without a slight feeling of shame, he scuttled under the sofa, where he felt comfortable at once, although his back was a little cramped, and he could not lift his head up, and his only regret was that his body was too broad to get the whole of it under the sofa. He strayed there all night, spending the time partly in a light slumber from which his hunger kept waking him up with a start, and partly in worrying and sketching vague hopes, which all led to the same conclusion, that he must lie now for the present and, by exercising patience and the utmost consideration, help the family to bear the inconvenience he was bound to cause them in his present condition. Very early in the morning, it was still almost night, Gregor had the chance to test the strength of his new resolutions, for his sister, nearly fully dressed, opened the door from the hall and peered in. She did not see him at once, yet when she caught sight of him under the sofa, well, he had to be somewhere. He couldn't have flown away, could he? She was so startled that without being able to help it, she slammed the door shut again. But as if regretting her behavior, she opened the door again, immediately, and came in on tiptoe, as if she were visiting an invalid or even a stranger. Gregor had pushed his head forward to the very edge of the sofa and watched her. Would she notice that he had left the milk standing, and not for lack of hunger, and would she bring in some other kind of food more to his taste? If she did not do it of her own accord, he would rather starve than draw her attention to the fact, although he felt a wild impulse to dart out from under the sofa, throw himself at her feet, and beg her for something to eat. But his sister at once noticed, with surprise, that the basin was still full, except for a little milk that had been spilt all around it. She lifted it immediately, not with her bare hands, true, but with a cloth, and carried it away. Gregor was widely curious to know what she would bring instead, and made various speculations about it. Yet what she actually did next, in the goodness of her heart, he could never have guessed at. To find out what he liked, she brought him a whole selection of food, all set out on an old newspaper. There were old, half-decayed vegetables, bones from last night's supper covered with a white sauce that had thickened, some raisins and almonds, a piece of cheese that Gregor would have called uneatable 2 days ago, a dry roll of bread, a buttered roll, and a roll both buttered and salted. Besides all that, she set down again the same basin into which she had poured some water and which was apparently to be reserved for his exclusive use. And with fine tact, knowing that Gregor would not eat in her presence, she withdrew quickly and even turned the key, to let him understand that he could take his ease as much as he liked. Gregor's legs all whizzed toward the food. His wounds must have healed completely. Moreover, for he felt no disability, which amazed him and made him reflect how more than a month ago, if he had cut one finger a little with a knife and had still suffered pain from the wound only the day before yesterday. Am I less sensitive now? He thought, and sucked greedily at the cheese, which above all other edibles attracted him at once and strongly. Once after another, and with tears of satisfaction in his eyes, he quickly devoured the cheese, the vegetables, and the sauce. The fresh food, on the other hand, had no charms for him. He could not even stand the smell of it, and actually dragged away to some little distance the things he could eat. He had long finished his meal, and was only lying lazily on the same spot when his sister turned the key slowly at the sign for him to retreat. That roused him at once, although he was nearly asleep, and he hurried himself under the sofa again. But he took considerable self-control for him to stay under the sofa. Even for a short time, his sister was in the room, since the large meal had swollen his body somewhat, and he was so cramped he could hardly breathe. Slight attacks of breathlessness afflicted him, and his eyes were starting a little out of his head. And as he watched his unsuspecting sister sweeping together with a broom not only the remains of what he had eaten, but even the things he had not touched, as if these were now of no use to anyone, and hastily shoveling it all into a bucket, which she covered with a wooden lid and carried away. Hardly had she turned her back when Gregor came out from under the sofa and stretched and puffed himself out. In this manner, Gregor was fed, once in the early morning, while his parents and the servant girl were asleep, and a second time after they all had their midday dinner, for then his parents took a short nap and the servant girl could be sent out on some errand or other by his sister. Not that they would have wanted him to starve, of course, but perhaps they could not have borne to know more about his feeding than from hearsay. Perhaps, too, his sister wanted to spare them such little anxieties, wherever possible, since they had quite enough to bear it as it was. Under what pretext the doctor and the locksmith had been got rid of on that first morning, Gregor could not discover, for since what he said was not understood by the others, it never struck any of them, not even his sister, that he could understand what they said. And so whenever his sister came into his room, he had to contend himself with hearing her utter only a sigh, and now then an occasional appeal to the saints. Later on, when she had got a little used to the situation, of course, she could never get completely used to it. She sometimes threw out a remark which was kindly meant or could not be interpreted. "Well, he liked his dinner today," she would say when Gregor had made a good clearance of his food. And when he had not eaten, which gradually happened more and more often, she would say almost sadly, "Everything's been left standing again." But although Gregor could get no news directly, he overheard a lot from the neighboring rooms, and as soon as voices were audible, he would run to the door to the room, concerned, and pressed his whole body against it. In the first few days, especially, there was no conversation that did not refer to him somehow, even if only indirectly. For 2 whole days, there were family consultations at every mealtime about what should be done, but also between meals, the same subject was discussed, for there was always at least 2 members of the family at home, since no one wanted to be alone in the flat, and to leave it quite empty was unthinkable. And on the very first of these days, the household cook, it was not quite clear what and how she knew of the situation, went down on her knees to his mother and begged leave to go, and when she departed 1/4 hour later, gave thanks for her dismissal with tears in her eyes, as if for the greatest benefit that could have been conferred on her, and without any prompting swore a solemn oath that she would never say a single word to anyone about what had happened. Now, I think that's enough for today. We have already hit our ending time of the show. I did have one more song, but I think it's better if we leave it for our next episode. But basically what happened is, you know, everyone knows that Gregor is, in fact, a vermin, a bug, and Gregor has found out. His sister is a very kind human. Until now, she is a very kind, understanding person, and she even gives Gregor a selection of options of what food he might desire because of his physicality, his changed state. And Gregor is indeed a bug. He is also attracted to the foods that bugs are attracted to. And his family is just in a crisis of what to do with Gregor. And that is where we are going to leave off of for today. We had some songs played in between. And yes, we will continue on the readings next episode. It will be on Tuesday again. depending on if I have a filling or not before, but most likely it will be on Tuesday. But thank you all again for joining Jess is Lit. For those of you who didn't make it or will make it later on or just will hear the recording, it is the Metamorphosis that we went over today, that we continued on for today from Franz Kafka, and we will continue on finishing this story as the future episodes proceed. Now, I hope all of you guys have a great evening and a great rest of your week. The sun has started to shine again. It was a bit gloomy in the morning, so that is always a positive. And so have yourselves a great evening and a great rest of your week. And I will see you all next week. Have a great rest of the day. Thank you all. Bye-bye.